Welcome to Mastering the Attention Economy Podcast. I'm your host, Ari Lewis. Twice a week, we interview entrepreneurs, executives, and industry leaders on how to break through the noise and capture the audience's attention. Today's guest is Russ Wild. Russ is the COO of Front Office Sports, an online publisher at the intersection of sports and business.
How's it going, Ari? Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining. Really appreciate it. You know, big fan of your Twitter account and what you guys are building. You know, first off, I wanted to, you know, talk about, right, you guys are focused on the intersection of business and sports, and I know you're a big New York Jets fan. You know, how do you feel about, you know, being so focused on that, where the Jets are such a horribly run organization, and you're sitting there all day focusing on studying business and sports? You know, I wanted to start off with that topic first.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's funny. I'm a Jets and Yankees fan, so at least I'm not a Jets Mets fan like most folks. Today, especially with the news kind of coming out about the ownership, I guess, and things like that, it's definitely a little bit tough to probably be a Jets fan at this point. And just got to keep hoping. We got Sam Darnold at the helm. Hopefully, he keeps growing, and hopefully, the future is bright. But as a Jets fan, it's never easy. That's for sure.
It could be a bit worse, because you could go from a Jets fan like me living in New York to a Cleveland Browns fan now that I live in Cleveland. So it's a bit more optimistic for you. But, you know, let's first start off with, you know, talking about, you know, your business, right? You're on the business side of things, and your partner, Adam, is on the editorial side of things. You know, when you guys started, Adam was, you know, in college, and I believe you joined. Did you join while still in college? Did you meet him in college? You know, what was that connection like?
Yeah, so we Adam started it. Actually, our 6-year anniversary was yesterday or the day before, I believe. And so he started just as a college project, as a way for him to sort of network with executives in and around the sports industry. And so he said, "Hey, let me interview executives, publish those on a blog, and see if we can get anyone outside of his parents to basically read it." And I joined Don once he came back for the fall semester of his sophomore year, and he just posted in our Facebook group at University of Miami and said, "Hey, I have this website, don't really know what it is or what it's going to be, but if you want to help out, it's kind of helping me network and navigate sort of, you know, the sports industry." So I reached out, we met up, just started kind of talking about ideas and what to do with the site, and it just kind of grew from there. And so originally, Adam for sure was more on the editorial side. I was kind of helping out, I guess, like with social media, coordinating interviews, and like just the growth strategy, I guess, in terms of scaling our social media audience and kind of, you know, translating that obviously into the website audience and things like that. But today it's much more sort of, you know, we're both, you know, I would say like 90% business side, 10% editorial. Like, we obviously help in terms of editorial strategy and, you know, building out sort of our new products. Like, if we launch a new newsletter, we're heavily involved in that process. But at this point, we're both actually on the business side. And that was something that when we raised investment in late 2018, we said, "Hey, look, like, let's hire real journalists to kind of handle the editorial side of the business. And we'll sort of continue to, you know, make sure Front Office Sports, the brand, and sort of, you know, was a healthy business, I guess, from a revenue standpoint and things like that."
So, you know, you guys started as, you know, individual content creators. The premise was just doing interviews originally. You know, how did you grow from there, and sort of how is that a good leverage and inflection point for really accelerating the growth of your audience? Because I think one of the things we see now is a lot of original analysis, and I like, you know, leveraging interviews because it's a good way to create sort of that social sharing. So, you know, how do you think that was more beneficial than starting with the original analysis and the original reporting that you guys also do as well now?
Yeah, I think it just helped from the perspective of, like, we were two college students that really nobody in the sports industry had any reason to talk to. And it gave us, like, it's different, right? Going to somebody and say, "Hey, let's catch up for 20 minutes and network," versus, "Hey, let me sort of like tell your story through an article on the site." And I think it just helped from a grassroots level, right? Like, we still have people today that have literally been reading us for 6 years, and you know, it's a drastic sort of difference from everything from just the quality of the content to just like the, you know, sophistication of what we're doing. But I think it just helped us lay that foundation, and, you know, everyone wants to build a community, right? Like, that's the buzzword. But I think we really did that you know, one, because we were just, you know, all we asked people for was their time, and that was it. And then two, like, we didn't have, I don't know, like, there was no catch. We weren't trying to turn it into a business. We really didn't even think of it as a business probably until 3 or 4 years into this thing. So for us, it was kind of like, look, like, we're going to tell your story. No catch related. Like, it's just, hey, let's sort of give us some of your time and we'll shed some pub for you. And that was it.
So when you guys began, did you go into this saying, like, we're going to do this as individual creators, or was it always under the front office sports brand? Because I know a lot of creators who are probably listening are, you know, building their Substack or building their individual community and probably going through, should I do this as an individual? Do I want to do this under a brand? You know, how did you think about that process and sort of that difference between, oh, being an individual versus being a brand?
Yeah, it was always sort of under the brand. And, you know, it wasn't something that we like thought of a lot. We just kind of did it. And like, I think Adam and myself are not, you know, like, we're not looking for credit, or we never sort of like, I don't know, we never really put ourselves first from like a branding perspective. It's always about the front office sports brand. And that was just organic to what we did at the beginning. And it was never sort of a thing where it was like, hey, let me write about my perspective on things. It was just kind of, hey, this is what it all goes under front office sports. And I think, you know, at the beginning, we sort of like, how we put it is, we leased credibility from the folks that we interviewed and sort of leveraged their credibility in the space to build our own. And I think, you know, obviously Adam and I now as individuals and the rest of our team are seen as credible individuals in the space, but it was always sort of about building the front office sports brand. And I think that's helped for sure, just in terms of like growing everything that we're doing.
And from a credibility point of view, and maybe even also from like that inflection point of, oh, we really have something there, you know, was it over time, or was there that like one interview or that one day where your stats were just off the chart and you're like, oh wow, we did it?
No, slow, gradual climb for sure. It was not, I mean, in terms of our editorial, I think the big sort of story that we published or broke that kind of like, if you could say, was the inflection point, was we actually broke the AAF bankruptcy. And that was in April. I think it was April of last year. And that actually allowed us to go out and like, I don't know, we hired Michael McCarthy, our first real editorial hire. Him and Ian Thomas were our first two hires. And Mike specifically in his interview was like, I saw you guys break that story. And I was like, all right, you're legit now. And that we just got lucky kind of breaking that story, that we found it before really anybody else. It's all public documents. But I think that was probably the one, you know, if I had to pinpoint one story where it was like, this is it was the AAF bankruptcy. And then the second one, Michael McCarthy broke a story. This was probably June. I think it had to have been summer sometime last year. It was the Roc Nation NFL partnership that Jay-Z was sort of going to be helping them with a lot of their, you know, diversity, I guess, efforts. And I think that was the second story that was kind of like the icing on the cake, I guess, in terms of us as a brand. But I mean, you know, all things considered, it's definitely a slow sort of climb, if you will.
So, you know, we talked about the content side, but I'd also like to touch on like this monetization path, you know, because I think a lot of folks, right, are, and we had a conversation before we started recording where, you know, people are building these individual communities and, you know, maybe they have some paying subscribers. You know, where have you guys seen the biggest interest from a monetization point of view? And like, one of the things I really like about you guys is you've diversified. You know, I love the job board. I think that's a really great idea. And, you know, many people probably aren't even thinking about doing job boards, and it could be really relevant to their newsletter. So can you talk more about those monetization strategies? And I'd love to actually hear specifically too about like that job board and how you guys came about that idea.
Yeah. So from a monetization standpoint, the newsletter is a huge driver of that. You know, for a variety of reasons, it's direct response. It's our most read product, I guess, on a day-to-day basis, right? At this point, we're having about 70,000 folks open that every day. So that's something we're just like, from a volume or scale perspective, it just drives the most. And you have premium CPMs on that asset just because of the, you know, again, it's direct response in nature. It's directly in people's inboxes. So the click-through sort of, you know, allows us to charge a premium CPM there. I think what we try to, I don't know, in terms of, I guess, diversification, we just have different sort of products depending on what the brands are looking for, right? So We have a live show that we sell, Fundamentals, Topgolf, our most recent partner there. We sell webinars to a lot of our B2B, B2B clients, just from a lead gen perspective, white paper, same sort of thing. So it's like, you know, we have, the way we look at it is we have our platforms, right? Newsletter, site, and social. And it's just sort of different products that tap into each of those three platforms, you know, to drive whatever the necessary business outcome is. But I would, you know, definitely the newsletter is our core asset from an advertising partnership perspective. I think in terms of the job board, that's something that we were always bullish on. And I think in the sports industry specifically, you have a couple job boards that are definitely, I don't know, kind of the legacy players in the space, I guess. And for us, it's, you know, it's something that we don't promote our job board outside of having the link at the top of our website. And that's somewhat like purposeful because we feel that anyone coming to the front office sports site and reading us is going to be a very, very high quality candidate. And we have, you know, we have comments from sort of people that have used our job board that suggest that just the sheer quality of folks that they see from our job board are way better than other job boards. So I think for us, it's like, you know, it's sort of, you know, inherent. Like if you're somebody that's reading our content on a day-to-day basis, you're going to know a lot about the industry and probably have a different perspective than somebody who isn't necessarily, I don't know, following their craft, so to speak. So for us, it's been largely, selling individual job postings on there, $100 or $250, just depending on sort of the promotion. But there's definitely the ability for us to launch, you know, a subscription for that and license it to teams and things like that. So no plans sort of in the near term with that, but it's something that, you know, we're basically just continuing to build it up until we're saying, hey, like now it's a licensed product sort of thing. So it's a slow build as kind of to reiterate from before. But
so one of the recurring conversations that I seem to have with a lot of the guests is sort of, you know, you have what is, you know, and John Yednak, who's a previous guest who runs a vertical media company, coined this term vertical media. And we sort of are seeing the unbundling of, you know, horizontal media, quote unquote. You know, is it happening in your space with, like, you know, the ESPNs of the world, where, you know, ESPN was, you know, this horizontal broad platform, and now it's like you guys are just focused on that business piece that, you know, Darren Rovell used to be in, that I feel like everyone knows from Twitter who left. Is that happening in your industry? Do you see that?
In sports, I mean, maybe a little bit, right? Like, I think you saw it. An example of this, I suppose, is sort of like Bill Simmons writing under the Grantland sort of platform rather than being on ESPN page two, kind of where he started. And I think even ESPN, they have the Undefeated. They've tested out sort of other verticals for themselves. So, I think they're probably the one example. I think the one area as well is a lot of publishers. So like Slam, Bleacher Report, for instance, they're creating verticalized platforms for social specifically. That's something that we've covered a handful of times. And even you have the leagues like the NFL, like they have, the NFL has a channel for tailgating. They have a channel for female fans and sort of segmenting their audience like that. We're definitely sort of seeing it. It happens a lot more, I think, on social than on sort of owned and operated platforms, just because these large organizations, they're able to kind of spin up these channels and grow them pretty quickly from an audience perspective. Outside of that, I think that's probably the most relevant example of kind of verticalization within sports.
So for folks looking to, you know, segment, unbundle, whatever term you want to use, you know, what is the key to success there? What were things that worked for you guys? And now, you know, looking at what you know now, what are the keys to success if someone's like, oh, I'm going to take some portion of ESPN and only write about it? Like, where do you see how someone could be successful doing that?
It's just doing it every single day. Like, it's on, like, you know, I see a lot of times sort of folks that write newsletters or things like that, and they, you know, they end up going once a week or biweekly or monthly, and I'm like, it's really hard. Like, it's really, it's just hard. The way we view our newsletter is like, it's a daily utility for people that either work in sports, in and around media, or, you know, just people that love sports, love business. And I think in order to really build something foundational, it has to become a utility. And I think it's really hard to become a utility if it's not a daily occurrence, or you're not talking to these people or your audience every single day in sort of like a cadence that like they get used to. That's kind of my perspective on that, I guess. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I guess, you know, to dive deeper into that, what are some of the things that you all have done to, you know, make your product to habit for your users, both from, you know, the email newsletter, but also on the website? You know, are there feedback loops in place that are rewarding that type of, you know, habits? You know, what are you all doing there?
Yeah, we could always do a better job. I think just in terms of, like, you know, driving our audience or getting them, you know, habitually sort of consuming FOS. In terms of the newsletter, we send it every day at 7:30. It's in people's inboxes. We also try sort of on the website, like, we're funneling them to different sections of the site. So for instance, if you, in our newsletter, right, if you scroll to the bottom, there's a poll every single day, and we're able to tap insights for that, both for our own sales team, but then also for partners and things like that. And if you click on one of those, you go to a landing page on our site that says, thanks for voting, share the newsletter here. And there's, you know, three articles that, you know, that you can look into or provide even feedback to us sort of via form there. So I think it's also, for us, the newsletter is that large touch point where we're funneling people to specific landing pages on our site or things like that. And we're even able to track that and say, look, if somebody's clicking on ticket sales oriented content every single day, or somebody's clicking on content related to, I don't know, like media acquisitions, like, we can sort of dive, you know, just make sort of assumptions about that individual and what other content they might like. We also use a platform called Piano. Digiday uses them, I think Business Insider as well. And something that we're looking to get better at is just sort of, you know, creating, I guess, you know, customized sort of experiences for folks as they come to the website, right? And just being, having that ability, even if it's something like, hey, if you've read 10 media articles in the last month, now we're going to have, you know, drive you to some sort of today's article on sports media, something like that. So we can get pretty, pretty sophisticated with sort of that. I think over time, we're still sort of, you know, not there just quite yet, but we have some ideas in terms of what that might look like going forward.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. You know, one of the questions just I have to ask, because Ian Bortwick asked it on Twitter, you know, do you think someone is going to, you know, buy Bleacher Report? And it's funny because Dave Nemitz will probably be the guest before you when we release this. So, but I had to ask that for Ian.
Yeah. So, I actually spoke with Ian about this. We were just catching up a few weeks ago. And so Michael McCarthy, one of our reporters, he broke, he got the inside bug that sort of, Bleacher Report was potentially in discussions to sell to DraftKings. And I think, you know, just from the perspective of, you know, the Penn deal with Barstool and all these gambling entities are looking to drive, you know, drive customer acquisition, the easiest way for DraftKings to have a, you know, instead of having millions of people download the DraftKings app, just acquire Bleacher Report, which has all of those users with, like, super high sort of monthly usage, right? So I think, you know, Bleacher Report, if AT&T is looking to sell off assets, I think it's a very valuable one, especially to sort of companies in the betting space. And as things open up across the country, I definitely think it makes sense for one of those players to come in and swoop them up. Like, they know how much it costs to acquire a user. They know how much they're going to have to spend on advertising the next 5-10 years. The numbers add up. It's going to make sense for somebody.
Yeah, and it's probably a conversation for another podcast you could dedicate just to affiliates, and specifically affiliates within the gambling space. But, you know, my last question that I always ask guests is, you know, if you were starting day one at Front Office Sports, knowing what you know now, you know, what would you be doing differently? What's, like, that one lesson, that one takeaway that you sort of have?
Yeah, I honestly think for us, we would probably, I don't know, it's a good question. There's so many friggin' things. I think maybe we would probably just invest more in the product itself in terms of, like, technology and things like that. Like, we have our new site coming out in, I guess, a week and a half, 2 weeks here now. And I think it's, like, it's just going to make such a big difference for us. And even just from the perspective of, like, funneling people to our newsletter, like, we really didn't get serious about that. We just kind of let it grow very organically up until probably a couple months ago. And then we were like, hey, like, let's aggressively start, you know, funneling people to, hey, sign up for the FOS newsletter, sign up for the newsletter on our, you know, using the audience that comes to our site and things like that. So I think that's the that's the one thing for us, is sort of just making sure the technology piece is there and being perceived, I think, sort of as a more premium brand like we do today, and like we will even more so when the new site comes out. Like, I think a lot of folks, you know, they grew up with us, right? They've been reading us for 6 years. And so, you know, we probably, if they see a bug on the website or something, you know, previously, they'd be like, they wouldn't sort of, you know, they'd just be like, oh, cool. Like, it's FOS, like, it's not a big deal. But I think just paying more attention to sort of like the technology piece and what our sort of product itself looks like, from, you know, from the website and newsletter and things like that, probably put more emphasis on that from the jump, just because the brand, you know, it just means everything to us in terms of like, you know, success going forward and things like that.
Makes a lot of sense. Well, Russ, I want to say thanks so much for joining today. Really appreciate it. You know, if folks are looking to find you on social, where can they look?
Yeah. So, at FRNTOFFICESPORT, pretty much everywhere, for Front Office Sports. And then myself is Russ Wild Jr. pretty much everywhere.
Great, great. And social links will be in the descriptions on iTunes and YouTube. Well, thanks so much, Russ. Really appreciate it. And have a good day.
Thanks, Ari.